The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix Podcast. Tune in today.
Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Kia ora koutou, welcome to a summer reissue of Dietary Requirements Podcast. We've taken a break to eat heaps of food and drink heaps of wine in the sun and do very little else. So we're republishing some of our favourite episodes from the year. This is our first of 2020, back in the heady days when Corona was just a shitty beer. And it was the first episode Sophie and I recorded with our brand new children. They were in the studio. And we did a breast milk taste test comparing my wife's breast milk to Sophie's. So if that feels like something that you'd like to listen to, continue on. Kia ora koutou. It's a new year. It's a new decade. It's almost February. Fuck.
Hey.
And the Dietary Requirements team is back, bringing you the most essential and weirdest insight on New Zealand food. But since we last spoke, there's been some big changes. Over the summer, we've added three members to the Dietary Requirements family. On December 3rd, Sophie?
Yep.
On December 3rd, Sophie's baby girl, Odette, was born, another Gilmore girl. And on Boxing Day, my twin boys, Max and Freddie, arrived just over 2 weeks early. All three, well, Freddie's actually just been taken to the doctor. Nothing to worry about, but he's just abandoned us. But Max, Odette, are joining us in the studio today. And part of our discussion is actually going to be about children and babies and what they eat and, you know, the way they change what adults eat as well, and a way to fix your life in the kitchen. And we're also going to be talking about what we ate this summer, because it's the best time of the year to eat, the most fun time of the year to eat, and it's, you know, when all the best things are in season as well. So we're going to combine those two topics for the first Dietary Requirements Podcast of 2020. In the studio today, I have Sophie Gilmore and Odette. Hi, Soph.
Hi.
Got Spinoff food editor Alice Neville.
Kia ora. I'm just holding little Max here, and he just did a big fart.
It's cute. I like, you know, it's such a dream being a newborn, burping and farting as loud and proud as possible.
Pretty good,
eh? You're encouraged to do it.
I love it how they call it, like, instead of calling it a fart, it's like wind.
Wind.
Or instead of a vomit, it's spill. And people keep saying to me, Odette looks really long. It's like, is it just called length because she hasn't stood up yet?
Maybe.
Isn't that just height?
I don't know if you can be tall lying down, though.
Yeah, I think so, as a human.
And we have another special guest, Ginny Grant. Ginny is a senior food writer for Cuisine magazine. She's a recipe developer and a food stylist. In her kitchen, there was always hot sauce to be had, a lemon to hand, and a gin within reach. She's actually got a gin with her right now.
Hi. My kind of gal.
In a past life, Ginny was a chef working for the likes of the River Cafe in London, Nico Cafe in Bulcott Street, Bristow in Wellington, and Delicious in Auckland.
Mm. Wow, you've really actually worked in some of my favourite restaurants in the entire world. That's cool.
But not for a long time. I haven't been in a kitchen, well, commercial kitchen, professional kitchen. Probably about 20 years now.
Yeah. Once you're out, eh? Too hot.
You know, yeah.
Your days of slaving over a hot stove are done.
Do you think you could raise children and work in a kitchen?
Yeah, of course you can.
Sounds intense, though, just because of the weird hours and
long hours. I think that they just become, well, they become like you, don't they, Soph?
Yeah, you just get on with it.
I know, they're hospo brats.
Yeah. 100%. I remember, like, I was saying to someone the other day, I don't have a very strong memory of my early childhood days, but I have a vivid memory of the underside of restaurant tables. I feel like I was just dragged into restaurants. I was playing on the floor under restaurant tables. Mm. I was drawing on restaurant tables. It's just, you know.
I think that sounds awesome. I'd love to be a hospo brat.
Yeah, it's fun. Odette's going to be one for sure.
It changes you forever, though. Like, you will forever be addicted to restaurants after
true.
That.
True.
Worst
not a problem.
Things to be addicted to, though.
Yeah.
True.
And Jenny has two sons, aged 12 and 14.
Yes.
She eats everything, but they've mostly stopped eating meat or stopped eating meat altogether?
Yeah, no, they've completely don't eat meat.
How did that happen?
Well.
The woke folk.
Yeah. No, they were watching an episode of Mythbusters testing the terminal velocity. So that's what sold them.
What? They watched it together. They made the decision together and they never looked back.
The oldest one decided to, and I think the second one just followed on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah, 3 years they've been vegetarian.
Good on them.
Wow. Mm.
It was really funny watching my young cousin's progress towards vegetarianism. He'd be eating a sausage and be going, "The poor piggy." Really upset, but still eating the sausage.
Mm. Yeah.
And before we go any further, we must thank our wonderful sponsors because we wouldn't be here without them. Freedom Farms makes all of the Spinoff's food coverage, including dietary... Excuse me, I had to burp. Including dietary requirements possible. They believe that everyone who eats meat has a responsibility to know how those animals have been farmed, and they're dedicated to providing you with the best pork, free-range eggs, and they're also dedicated to the Spinoff's unique coverage of the New Zealand food scene. So show your gratitude and buy their delicious products whenever you can. So, summer has gotten pretty awesome. The weather has been really, really amazing, and I'm hating it because it stops my little boys from sleeping. And I felt like my summer ended before it even started. And I was meant to spend 2 weeks cooking and relaxing and weeding the garden and getting all those jobs done that you never do otherwise before they arrived. But then they came on Boxing Day. And that actually led me to eat some of the worst food I've ever had in my whole entire life.
That's sad.
So before we get to that, because I do want to have a rant about hospital food, shall we find out if anyone else has had a more positive culinary experience of New Zealand summer?
Yep.
I think it sounds like everyone has, Simon. A more positive experience
more positive
than you.
Yeah.
It can't be. Well, I've been loving the food everyone's dropped off, and I'm so grateful for that, but I don't think there's anything worse than hospital food, which is just, it frustrates me.
I actually just don't eat it. I ate the food at birth care, and I really settled in there for 4 days, ate everything they gave me. People were bringing stuff in, and I was like, absolutely not. I'll be having the chicken penne. And David was laughing at me like, you would usually turn your nose up at it. I was like, I kind of feel like I'm getting into the vibe. It's a bit of an activity, like we're on a food holiday.
Can't you get a glass of wine at birth care too?
You can.
We had wine in our fridge.
Beautiful.
I didn't know you could ask for it yourself.
The cheese toasty at birth care is legendary.
They're actually not that good, to be honest.
Oh, really?
No, yeah, I ordered one the night we got there, these famous toasties. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm sort of like still in shock from having just given birth. I'm like, what is going on? It kind of felt like the serotonin had left my body, but the adrenaline was still there. Mm. So I was still kind of hungry. Ordered the toastie, massive blowout.
Oh, no.
Disappointing.
Well, you might have to write a review of that because it is... It's infamous. It lives all like above men whose partners are about to have a baby. They can't wait to go to birth care and get the toastie at 3 a.m.
Yeah, look, it would have to be in comparison maybe to not eating things that make it good. I could do an anonymous review because otherwise I have nothing but love for birth care.
Okay.
Birth care, for our out of Auckland listeners, is a magical place where you get to go after giving birth at Auckland Hospital. Is that right?
It's where they
shunt it out after 2 hours.
Yeah, 3 hours after giving birth, you have to go, regardless of what day it is.
What?
If you don't have any of what time it is, regardless of. Oh, well, no. If you have a medical issue, if you've had surgery or caesarean, you stay in overnight, or if there's any complication. But Odette was born at 10 p.m. and at 1 a.m. You get the heave-ho.
That's pretty shit.
What? That's crazy. I didn't know that.
I was pretty keen to get out of there. Knowing that you've got somewhere like Birthcare to go is awesome. We're really lucky, I think.
Yeah.
Because I spent 8 days in hospital.
Did you?
Because they were born early and it was all about teaching them to feed. They developed the sucking reflex in the last 2 weeks in the womb. And it was really important, again, because they were small and premature, that they'd, we weren't allowed to leave until they'd learned to feed properly and they'd also developed bottle feeding skills, so that there was an alternative plan should things not go the way they we hoped at home. So 8 days in hospital, 8 days of hospital food. Oh,
did you hit probably a few hours before I gave labour, before I went, no, I was already in labour, went down to that staff cafeteria in the hospital? That was a bit of a vibe.
It was okay.
Maybe on day one it would be. I can understand after 8 days.
So December 30th is our wedding anniversary and we got McDonald's Uber Eats.
Oh, flash.
But no, that was actually a welcome relief because we were really lucky in that my parents and friends delivered really beautiful, nutritious food.
Mm. And the coffee's good at Auckland Hospital.
But not everyone has that option or luxury. And this is a place where you're going to try and get better. And it just makes me, I can't understand why you're being given such overcooked, terrible food when your body's trying to
it's
put
itself
together.
It's the same as rest time. It's just because, you know, the standards have been low. Mm.
And feed everyone.
I do appreciate that it's a really fucking hard job to 3 times a day roll out meals in that environment to that many people. But it just doesn't make sense. Like, it doesn't feel like it's helping anyone.
I straight up don't eat it. I think it's disgusting. Like, there was some plate of what they were calling carbonara, which is ironic. our listeners will know that I love nothing more than carbonara. But it was like, it was watery and it actually looked like someone had vomited on the plate. And I looked at it and it was glad wrapped. And I was like, that is just the most, like, it's just a strong no from me. But I eat the yogurt on the side or the piece of fruit or whatever.
So easily the best thing that we ended up eating and ordering at each meal was the macaroni and cheese.
Mm.
And that was quite clearly from a packet.
Yeah.
So yes, that's a little bit alarming. But otherwise, can't be more grateful to all the people who looked after us, the surgeons, the pediatricians, the midwives especially, in Auckland Hospital. They sent us home feeling really confident and they sent us home happy and healthy. So shot.
Just these are two very well-rounded young men we've got here, Simon. One of them.
Thank you.
You've done well. Mm. I also felt when I was there really aware of what a luxury it is to have a public health system like ours.
Oh, totally.
Like, we were basically, I was in labour and we were basically given a room for the afternoon. And you know it's going to take ages. They're like, this is your room. You just do whatever you need to in it. It's like, what? Cool. Like, this wasn't even a shared room.
It's crazy, eh? It's very, very cool.
Yeah.
But anyway, Jenny, what have you been eating this summer?
Do you know what? I've been eating not much in the way of anything hot, just salads.
Yeah.
It's too hot.
It has been so hot, eh?
Yeah. You know,
what sort of salads?
You know, anything with tomatoes and cucumber, eggplant. I love eggplant.
Yeah,
Love the eggplant. Rice paper rolls. You know, I just can't face cooking.
Yeah.
I've really lost completely.
So you don't cook components of the salad? Like, do you do it?
Oh, sometimes. Yeah.
I've been doing this, it's called Jamie Does Italy.
Yes.
So it's Jamie Oliver's new Italian cookbook. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to sort of cook my way through that. And there's this really yum salad, which is made with apricots. And I made it twice with apricots. And I just kept feeling like I was missing something. Just you basically char grill apricots and thyme together.
Mm.
And then put it with mozzarella and prosciutto and pink peppercorns, vinaigrette, lettuce sort of thing. But every time I ate it, I was like, this is just gross. And then I figured out that the problem is the apricots that we have here that are picked before they're ready to be picked. They are so tart. It just almost took away from the salad rather than adding to it. So then I made it the other night with white peaches, the exact same salad, and it was bloody delicious.
Yeah.
See, Sophie brought that salad round to my house as a gift to welcome the boys into the world, and I really liked it. I thought they were juicy.
I think you were just grateful for
maybe I got good apricots.
Yeah, they just were not even, and to be fair, the recipe doesn't say to add sugar to them like I would have expected, toss them in honey or anything.
Yeah, I suppose that comes down to you kind of tasting them first and seeing how ripe they are.
That's what I should have done.
Yeah.
But then as soon as I used peaches, it was just like caramelised better.
I was going to say, everything caramelises. It's delicious.
I went to Lillian last night.
Oh, yeah, we were there last week.
Jenny and I went last week.
Honestly, who is not there? I spent more time on my feet saying hi to people than I did actually sitting down at the table.
I saw more millennials than I've seen
in a long time. Millennials. They were all in
I was the oldest person.
They're very beautiful.
It's too beautiful, like white linen. It's still very good, but it's something about it disconcerting.
Just so well put together.
To everyone is very like...
The people or the restaurant?
So made
the
up.
People.
Not a hair.
What about the restaurant and the food?
Great. The restaurant looks really beautiful and the food was great.
Yeah, that pizza we
Four out of five things Ooh. That we had were bloody delicious.
Mm. What did you get?
The pizza with the nduja.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And we got the one with the zucchini and stuff.
Yeah. And then we had the cos lettuce with the kind of quite light fresh ranch dressing and like nuts. Yeah. And then we had the peaches that were sitting on a like goat's cheesy whip with basil.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that, yeah, and then we had, oh, that's it.
Yeah. We had the flounder as well.
The flounder was
great. Delicious. Really good. Pizza's having a moment. The sourdough pizza moment. Yeah.
And pasta, isn't it? Or maybe we've moved from pasta through to the pizza moment.
There's a real Italian moment, I think. There's lots of Italian joints opening up. It's gone from being sort of old-fashioned to cool, really cool again.
Yeah.
Is Lillian supposed to be French?
I don't think so.
I'm thinking not of Lillian, but of like Romulus and Remus.
Yeah, that's right by my house and I haven't been yet.
Of the new...
Is Romulus and Remus where Jaffa used to be?
Yeah.
On Richmond Road?
Yeah.
And what sort of food is it?
Italian.
Roman.
Oh, right. That seems obvious now that you mention it.
And then like the... What's it called in Westmeet? No, Waterview? The place that was Everybody Eats.
Oh, Bucatini Brothers or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I
haven't been there yet.
Barbarino.
There you go, yeah. Exactly. Sort of put your pasta to, you know, pick your path pasta, which I don't agree with, but everyone seems to love it and that's what's important.
Good party portions.
I thought it was, good enough. It was quite reasonably priced. Like it was...
Yeah,
I kept thinking that's a bit cheap, and then it came out, and I was like, oh, that's why it's cheap. Yeah.
See, to me, it reminds me of like a poor execution of the pasta joint on Cuba Street in Wellington.
1154.
Oh, obsessed.
Because love that's simple and effective and really minimal and makes ordering super simple, but doesn't let you fuck it up because you kind of...
It's prescribed.
It's taking the expertise of the chefs, their understanding of Italian food and making it really easy for you to understand rather than, you know, we've talked about this before a lot, about the way that certain sauces are made to go with certain types of pasta.
Mm. Totally.
That's what I think grates me about Barbarino. But if people love it, then that's great.
Yeah. To me, it was like an awesome place to take kids. You know, it was like spaghetti bolognese, like you would have made at home if you had more time that day, sort of thing. It's not trying to be mega fancy. They have one beer, and you have to order at the counter, so that it's like quite a long line. And then the food comes out in the order that people have paid. So it's not like you don't get your food at the same time because you're not effectively splitting the bill. You each have your own bill.
Right. I thought the ordering at the counter thing didn't really work because there was like massive queues at all times.
Yeah. But maybe that's just good because it's busy and that's what the people wanted.
Yeah.
Well, there's not much out there.
Mm. Jenny and I also went to Clay, the new natural wine bar on Clay Road.
You hipsters.
We get around. Mm. Well, if anyone wants, we always want to go to the new places.
We always want to go.
Run us through the natties, the bar. Did you drink many of them?
Yeah, we drank quite a lot of Pet Nat.
Mm-hmm. We did.
Yeah.
Very probably nice. The Milton.
Pet Nat's my favourite natural
wine.
Which
Pet Nat were we drinking? I can't remember. Something yum.
Didn't Milton?
No, the Milton. I had like
glass
of that.
You had a Milton something, didn't
you? Labiano.
Yeah. We had a corn pizza that was yum.
How do you feel, Jenny, about natural wine?
I like natural wine, yeah.
But are you a devotee? Would you drink exclusively natural wine or you like a bit of everything?
I drink a bit of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, mix
all
it up.
I think that's the key, is just to love it all if it's good.
Same, but I'm asking because this wine bar has only natural wine.
Yeah.
So you've got to be...
What I would say is that I don't think that they have enough staff there to tell you actually about what you're drinking.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah, they guys. Kind of presume that everyone is.
They assume that you know quite a bit.
Oh. Sorry, I'm just feeding Max and he's gone a bit too hard too soon.
He's choking like on his bottle.
Like his dad. Sounds like his dad with the beers.
Yeah. Yeah. Peak too soon, Max.
Yeah, that'll be an Auckland staffing problem, won't it?
Mm. I just think, you know, if you're, because they've got, you know, an on license as well, so, you know, you can buy a bottle of wine to take away. But it'd be great to have either some notes or someone to be able to tell you. And I mean, admittedly, the night that we were there, it was incredibly busy.
Heaving. Yeah. Heaving.
And if I'm honest, it's not that hard to teach your staff about what you're offering.
Yeah.
I worked at a restaurant in Melbourne and we only received 50% of our tips until we passed a test about the food, the wine, and the restaurant as a whole, like the, you know, who made the curtains, who was the architect. And I thought that was really clever because it made me really invest in being able to talk shit about everything that a customer might want to know because I had an incentive to do it.
And unfortunately, though, the attitude that you've got there is a bit of a rarity. And when you say it's not that hard, Taxi Dining Room that you were working at is one of the top restaurants in Melbourne. So, like, it's difficult in Auckland to get staff that are keen, willing, interested and dedicated in the way that you said you were. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm making excuses. I mean, they should just bloody well learn the tasting notes, shouldn't they?
Yep.
Yeah, they should.
And we've been very Auckland focused, from Auckland Hospital to K Road to Richmond Road. Did anyone leave the city?
I went to Waiheke Island.
Does that count? No, of course you did.
That's it. But you guys did.
I did. I went down to Wellington for a little bit and I up at Whangarei Heads.
Did you eat anywhere nice in Wellington?
Only at my friend Anna's.
Have you ever been to Shepherd?
Yes. Yep.
I've never been. I feel like I'm really missing something.
That's where Nancy Silverton fed me.
Yeah, that was a good meal.
So Shepherd Elliott, the chef, is a very wonderful guy. And
nice.
And has the right vibe about food, I think.
Yeah.
Hey, good boy.
There's a lot of wind going on here. Sorry, listeners.
No, it's the most frustrating yet satisfying thing about parenting so far. Is it 3 in the morning when it takes an hour to get a burp out? Oof. That ain't fun.
Yeah.
But when you get it out, you're so proud.
You never thought you'd high five over farts and burps so much. Yeah.
It's like he's just won a gold medal at the Olympics.
He has. I went to Hawke's Bay.
A lot of good food there.
Yes, we had a really lovely lunch at Black Barn one day. We again did most of our cooking at home. Mm. I really think that Sabato deserves a bit of a shout out. Like, I went there before Christmas and my Lord, can you drop some money? But I bought like a 3 litre of olive oil, a whole lot of really lovely pasta, some tins of nice tuna, things like that I took with me on my trip around New Zealand. And, you know, like a massive jar of olives and it will last for 20 different meals. And it was just such a nice thing to have, like a beautiful vinegar and a nice olive oil and just bits and pieces. And
I actually think that is the key to good summer cooking or non-cooking. Is actually having really great olive oil and a really good vinegar.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know?
That form of vinegar is like mental, but you just can't go back, can you?
No, you can't go back to anything else afterwards.
Yeah. I have to think maybe we should all get that for each other as like birthday presents. It's sort of like it's venturing into the scented candle zone where it's like a bit weird to buy for yourself like $100. It's $75. It's $75 for the
pretty massive
one, and I think it's $40 for the small one.
Right.
But I just was like, I'm going to get a bigger one, and it will last me. It does last like
it lasts forever.
Seriously, like 6 months.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't think twice about having a couple spending that on 2 beers for a night.
That's true. Yeah.
One of my favorite things I did last year was go and pick olives at a friend's property on Waiheke, and then a couple of months later got to
have the olive oil.
Yeah, and it was so delicious. Yeah. It's so different to the mainstream stuff you buy off the shelf.
Really like, you know, like when you get those real Tuscan ones that are really kind of peppery and it catches you right at the back of the throat. And
I actually really
like it like that, but I know that lots of people don't.
That's the only time when I would prefer olive oil with bread than butter. I hate it when you get like this piddly little weak olive oil on the table and you dip your bread in it and you're like, is that canola oil? Like I'd rather have butter, thanks.
And like one dunk and then the oil's gone and you're like, oh.
Yeah. Those silly little dishes, yeah. And people do it with the
balsamic too, and they put like two drops of balsamic in it.
Yeah. I wish they'd leave the balsamic out.
So do I.
Yeah, it's a real nice think
it's not needed if the oil's nice.
No.
Yeah. I also think restaurants should provide more butter when they give me butter for my bread.
Always more butter.
Or just ask for more.
Well, no, I always do, but like.
I'm not afraid to ask for more butter.
No, neither.
Nor am I, but I do think that we are an exception and that it's unfair making you want to ask for more butter when you know that that giant piece of sourdough you've given requires a thick schmear.
It should look like cheese, really, in my opinion. The ratio is about right when it looks like a thick slice of cheddar.
Yeah.
That's something we should investigate one day, Alice, is the koru hour cheese to cracker ratio.
It's about the best
ratio. Yeah, it's the best ratio.
All about it.
It's kind of overwhelming, but I love it.
No, because I like that you've got that one piece of cheese afterwards that's got no cracker.
And you're just like, oh, sweet, okay.
Better than the other way around. They've obviously figured out that we'd be calling them stingy.
Yeah.
If they didn't have enough cheese for the crackers.
This is true.
And that would be a cheaper way to go, wouldn't it?
One thing we need to learn in New Zealand, which I learned while living in Paris, was that crackers are overrated.
Of course you did.
And we should be eating our cheese on bread. We should have baguettes for cheese.
But, you know, and do you know like a dirty cracker?
But do you know what I think also is, maybe it's just because I'm like so gluttonous. If you slice baguette really thin, it's so much better than a cracker, but it's not like having a big slice of bread. Like slice it as thin as a cracker and put that with cheese. Delicious.
And importantly, the French have butter on their bread with their cheese.
Yeah. Always gonna have butter.
That is a vibe.
Always.
We should do that. But do they do that? Yeah. See, we eat cheese in New Zealand like as a snack item before a meal, which is very appetite ruining, I think.
Look, I'll eat cheese at any time of the day.
Yeah, of course we will. But is that, like, should we be doing that?
I don't know. Probably not.
I used to just bite straight into the block of cheese when I'd come home drunk at the flat.
Yeah,
be like giant chunks out of the Edam.
Yes.
Edam.
Underrated. I hated Edam.
I tell you what is really hard is finding a really good vegetarian, tasty cheese for your children when you know you're going through a huge amount of it.
What do you mean vegetarian?
The rennet.
The rennet. It's the rennet factor.
What's rennet made from?
Cow stomach.
Yeah.
But you can get vegetarian. It doesn't change the taste.
Sometimes I think some of them don't tell you they're actually vegetarian.
Did your kids know this? Did they figure it out? Or were you like?
No, I made a mistake of telling them.
Yeah, I was going to say, come on, mate.
I was too honest to them. I do occasionally am a little bit naughty. And so
how do you shape your children's palate? Because that's something I'm really conscious of as they grow up. I want them to be, you know, experimental, adventurous, and eat everything from the start, but it doesn't feel like it's something you can actually.
No, and it won't happen. And then they'll go through that really awful, bland stage, and that's just awful. But I just think, you know, just keep trying stuff. That's always my big thing. And also now, when they became vegetarian, I actually said, well, that's fine, but you guys eat really limited amount of vegetables, so you actually need to
up your veggie game.
Yeah. And I said, you know, my rule is that you have to try everything. You don't have to eat it. You can always go and make yourself some toast.
Yeah.
That's a good way to go.
There's always an out.
There's always an out.
That was the philosophy in our family was, here's dinner. If you don't like it,
you don't have to eat it. Yeah. And there's always fruit in the bowl and yogurt in the fridge.
Yeah.
And that was like.
I just remember having, you know, when I was growing up, my sister, who loathed Brussels sprouts, she would be there sitting at the table for hours. Hours and hours. We didn't have a dog to get rid of it, too.
So was she not allowed to leave until she left?
No.
I had broccoli standoffs with my dad.
Lots of people had that rule where you couldn't leave the table until you'd finished your dinner.
Oh, yeah, my family, it was just a free-for-all. I was the youngest child. No one gave a shit.
There are huge benefits. My wife is the youngest child, and it's like her parents had given up by that point. And
great.
You know, Millie would have plain spaghetti for dinner, just, you know.
Delicious. Yeah.
Nutritious as well, very nutritious.
Yeah, as long as it has a bit of butter in it, it'll be fine, right?
So what are your kids, what is their favourite thing to eat that you cook them? Like, what's
Well, my youngest is a real carbo loader, so he would say potato gratin or a vegetarian lasagna.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my other one, who is kind of like veers towards really light, kind of he would probably go rice paper rolls or kind of taco-y kind of scenario.
And what do you put in them for him? Tofu and stuff? Do
they like tofu? Yeah, they like tofu. Tofu, you know, make a hoisin peanutty sauce.
Yeah.
Veggies.
Yeah.
Delicious.
See, that sounds
what and we I do want. It and I do it at the table so that you just basically we just chop up all the veggies and get a bowl and then everyone just I mean it's messy but it's fine. You just everyone just help themselves.
They're bloody lucky having you for a mum, I tell you what.
But they've reached that point, but did they go through the period where they're like all I will eat is
I don't remember them being
chicken
really,
nuggets.
No, but I just refuse to buy chicken nuggets. I just can't go there. Actually, that's something that really gets at my goat is children's meals are terrible.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah. You know, chips and nuggets or fish and chips. And as if you've got vegetarians, well, that's not going to work for them.
I was talking to my sister about that, actually, who has three children aged between 4 and 9. How certain places will just put no effort into the kids' menu. No. It'll just be like deep-fried shit. She went to a place called Govino in Cook's Beach when they were there on holiday recently. And they have an amazing kids menu and does like proper nice food, but in kids form.
Yeah.
We did quite a good one at Bird. We did like...
Can we hear Sophie at all?
We made it. Sorry, I'm jiggling the child.
Jiggling the child.
We did, you know, like a sort of roast meal, but it had carrots and peas on it rather than just giving them fried chicken or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Because right now, our children, it's quite, it buzzes me out that all they need to survive is milk.
I know. Yeah, that is crazy.
Because we come onto this podcast to talk about food, you know, mostly in the pleasure and joy that we get from it and the fun it is to eat it and cook it. But there is a bit that we often forget about is the sustenance, the fact that it is there to keep us alive.
Yeah.
I've been so blown away by what women's bodies, what they give humanity over and over and over again for millions of years.
What do you guys offer us? Nothing.
That's what a couple of male friends.
Why do you have nipples, Simon?
Yes, Simon.
Well, I think men should be the ones who have breasts.
Yeah.
So the women can carry the baby, birth the child, and then they have to be given to us to then try and keep them alive because it's not that much fun breastfeeding. Holy. Like, it's really, really hard to convince these guys to continue to keep themselves alive.
To have what's good for them.
Yeah. Did you see that story about how there's a move to tell women to stop texting while breastfeeding? And I just thought, come on, like, you're a prisoner on your own couch with this little thing attached to you.
You're a milking machine. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing you can do.
If you can't even look at your phone, you just have to gaze adoringly.
Bet that article was written by a man.
Actually, we had a good response to it on the spinoff.co.nz by, I can't remember the author's name, sorry, but it was a good response basically saying exactly that.
Yeah.
I guess that it's a different time, so it seems like you're being less present. And do you know what? There is something about breastfeeding, like, I often, it blows my mind how the baby just stares at you the whole time. Like, when they're not asleep, their eyes are open and they're just looking at you. And so you do have to remind yourself to, like, enjoy
look
the moment.
Occasionally.
And be present occasionally, but shit's still got to get done.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't just schedule breastfeeding as downtime because the rest of the time you need to be on doing other stuff too.
Yeah. And making sure you look after yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I think is the hardest part. Everyone forgets about the mother and the fact that a happy baby requires happy parents as well.
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely. It's been such a fascinating experience becoming a new parent, but it's also really stressful and hard. And there's, you know, the weirdest part is putting the same inputs in every day and getting different outputs. Like there's no rationality or.
That's what's cool about it, I think, is that you have no control. So like, just don't try and control the situation because you know there's something nice about. Giving yourself permission to just go with the flow, particularly when you're normally quite sort of structured or busy, or which I tend to be. So, you know, when she woke up in the night at first, we'd just
light a candle, sit up, have a yarn, feed the baby, go back to sleep, instead of being like, well, it's been 4 hours and worrying about it.
There's a lot of people that do get so stressed about that kind of stuff. Yeah. I think you just got to let it all walk out.
Well, you've just got just calm it's, down. Yeah, it's quite an awakening that you have absolutely no control. So just don't even flatter yourself to think that you do.
Yeah.
So a good chance, I guess, for me to taste Sophie's breast milk. pre-expressed, I'm not going to attempt to latch.
I haven't. I haven't tasted it myself.
Have you tasted Millie's?
I have. It's delicious. I think it's.
Oh, Simon.
Well, I don't. Well, that's what I want to push back against. Is why does it have to be weird?
Do you know? I feel weird about it. But I'm not proud of that. And I do, like, we do just drink cow's milk like it's.
Mm. We drink all sorts of
milk. But it feels like a human bodily fluid.
Well, it is, I guess.
I think that's why I find it gross. It's like you're drinking someone's bodily fluid. I know it's for drinking. It's just something, I'm not proud of it, but it just horrifies me. That fascinates me. So please.
I've run a couple of people's, I've run it past a couple of people today that Simon's activity on the podcast is. Taste testing my breast milk and comparing it to his wife's breast milk, and I had some pretty shocked faces.
I forgot I left Millie's breast milk sitting on the counter at home out in the heat. So that's a
waste.
That's a waste of like nectar.
Vertical, horizontal tasting.
Can you make liquid gold ricotta or something with it?
You can make cheese from breast milk, but according to my Google skills.
And ice cream, I think.
There's an ice cream joint in London and New York that has breast milk flavors.
What, people are actually, like, expressing breast milk into an ice cream machine, and it is human.
I don't know if
milk.
They're expressing them directly into the churning
ice cream. No, but what I'm asking is...
It actually could be quite nice.
Is it actual human breast milk?
Yeah.
What, just a mixture of? I mean, no one's churning out 10 litres a day.
But you can, like, you could get a whole bunch of breast milk from the breast bank. You know, maybe get a whole... A lot of women to contribute to your Mr. Whippy
Trot. Breast milk cocktail. Okay.
So friends of Catherine Cox has made a white Russian with breast milk.
Wow.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
So, but I'm just going to have it neat.
he's doing it. I'm videoing.
Neat.
Chill. But breast milk, I think, is delicious. It's a little bit sweet.
Does it have that fat on the top?
It's very fatty.
The fat rises to the top like that school
I've
milk.
Stirred it up. But it's...
Do you want like a wine glass to pour it in?
Do you need a chaser?
No, I don't need a chaser.
Oh, my God. I can't look. Oh, my God. Oh. He just drank the whole thing.
Because it's not...
he didn't even wince.
But it's... I hate the texture of cow's milk. I would never drink cow's milk straight.
Oh, really?
But that's
maybe you were a milk drinker.
No. I actually judge people who drink glasses of milk.
Oh, yeah, it's weird. Unless you're a child.
But that is... I would drink a glass. I'd drink that on ice. That was really delicious.
If you were a sommelier, could you just give us some tasting notes?
Yeah.
So the sweetness is the thing that always strikes people who are willing to give breast milk a try.
Sweeter than regular cow's milk, not as sweet as caramel milk.
Much sweeter than cow's milk, like nowhere near as sweet as like a vanilla Primo.
Okay.
Vanilla
Primo.
Texturally, it's a lot more watery than you'd expect.
Looks really? Like it, yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, it has a real fatty creaminess to it.
Oh.
Is
there any breast milk on the roof of your mouth now?
Yeah, no, it's got a really... what is that in tasting notes when it's got a long...
Finish.
It's got a long finish.
Yeah.
It's really... It's got a lot of... Not tannins, obviously, but it's coated my mouth.
Moccasins. Yeah.
But no, it's that would be like if you could make a chocolate milkshake with that, it would be amazing.
Okay,
so compare it to Millie, your wife's breast milk. Was it very similar, or was it like does every person have their own nuance? Is it like terroir? She's like Millie's
depends on what
Lady Titirangi and.
No, you can definitely
get the. Mine's a little bit spiked with rosé.
The Akaroa notes in it.
If I'm honest, the Akaroa notes, the Canterbury. Nice. Okay, so Simon and little baby Max just had to step out to a baby-related appointment, but the ladies will continue on. So I brought in some food today because I thought you guys might want to just try the babies on solids. Is it a good time for that?
Yeah, classic person who doesn't have baby chat, because I actually, do you know what? I only found that out yesterday, Alice. I was like, when do they start solids?
When do they start solids?
So the answer was... 6 months or when they first start showing an interest in you and what you're eating.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. So my sister's youngest child, Octavia, was at about 4 months trying to sort of lurch herself at everyone's spoon.
Classic Gilmore Girl.
Yeah. She's right into it. So I think that that's when you start. But I also, I'm not one of those people that's done all the reading, so I wasn't sure either. I was like, so when do I start sort of pureeing up some pumpkin and stuff? It's like, not for a while, so she's only 8 weeks old.
And is it advised to give them lolly cake and gingerbread men? Because that's what I brought along today.
No.
Yeah, I mean,
what if you give it a go. What if you pureed it?
Odette's currently asleep, but she does have her mouth open.
She's jamming.
Jamming
a gingerbread man already.
No time like the present.
Yeah.
I can't believe how much of a champ Simon was with that breast milk. Wow.
Yeah, we're still in shock over here.
Sculled it.
Yeah, he really did. Like, just without no qualm.
No.
But that's cool.
Is he the first non-Odette person to drink your breast milk?
Yes, yeah, I haven't drunk it actually. Yeah, we haven't talked about that as a family. I mean, is that some sort of rite of passage that we should have completed before I offered it to Simon?
Probably.
Did you give yours a go, Jenny, when you had
breastfeeding? I must have.
Long time ago.
Yeah, it's ancient history now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I think that something Simon said that is a little bit true that I've noticed is, firstly, I will say that this breastfeeding appetite is like nothing I've ever experienced.
Really?
I am ravenous all the time.
Really?
And usually I don't have a really big appetite. I'm just a bit greedy and overeat. Mm. But at the normal times of day.
Yeah.
This has become like meals between meals. And so I can understand, not why Simon has,
morning
but
tea,
why.
Afternoon tea.
Yeah, snacks.
After dinner snack.
Yeah. It's mental. And as soon as you put the food in your mouth, your body goes, oh yeah, more of that please.
Right.
So it's the actual quantity at each meal as well is getting quite alarming. So
it's not just you. Yeah. Just feeding you.
Yeah. Just helping this tiny thing that probably doesn't need that much.
Yeah.
Keep it up.
But Simon said that your standards lower quite a bit. And I think that's funny because my kind of rule to myself is always, and it's a very privileged rule to have, but it's to not eat something unless I think it tastes really good.
Yeah.
So not mindlessly eat. And that's because we are so surrounded, and I am so surrounded by delicious food that it doesn't make sense to eat that and eat a whole lot of rubbish.
Yeah.
Anyway, so because there's so many meals happening, there's just absolutely no way you can plan for 17 delicious meals a day.
Make sure they're all delicious.
So your standards really do drop. Like you'll see this morning when I came in, I got the podcast timing wrong.
Only by 4 hours or so.
4 and a half, I left you with some snacks that I had brought in the middle of a Fatima's meeting. We're sitting around having a chat about operational things, and I popped next door to the Early Bird Bakery on Ponsonby Road, which is also neighbouring Bird on a Wire, which was the original site. So you'd think I would have been in there before, but no, first time caller. I went in and bought a bacon and egg pie, some little mint savouries, a ham, tomato, and egg sandwich.
Yum.
This is at 9 o'clock in the morning. So I think that, I can understand that your standards drop a lot.
Dropped.
Do you remember that, Jenny?
Yeah, I don't remember, in all honesty.
Yeah.
I'm lucky. My mum probably brought round loads of meals, I suspect.
A mother until recently, I've always kind of scrolled past all the mommy bloggers and all their tips and stuff.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, maybe I should have been listening, but someone said to me recently that the best tip that they ever got was to start preparing the evening meal during the day so that you have, you know, between feeding the baby and stuff, you've got stuff to do. And then it means that when it comes to witching hour,
think that the microwave, the freezer and leftovers are your best friends.
Mm. I love, we just bought a chest freezer. I'm planning to turn myself into Nigella any minute now.
Yeah, that's true though.
But yeah, I think that
make more than you need, and then you've kind of got something for a night where you just know you can't.
Yeah, and another a cookbook I was given for Christmas, Camille, who I work with and who was our exec chef at Bird on a Wire, did she wrote an article recently about her favourite cookbook of all time, and she's got 10,000 cookbooks, and she worked at a place in London called Books for Cooks.
It's a great place.
Great
for
store.
Like 7 years, and so that is a cookbook shop, but she also cooked a meal, a
three-course meal every day for lunch for the people that came in for lunch, made three cakes every morning kind of thing. So she's a total domestic goddess, and she always cooks from cookbooks. Mm. Like every night her family eat sort of three courses from a cookbook, and there's always a cake three on the courses. Bench. Yeah, she's a total overachiever.
She's also my sister's good friend, and Sophie just, if they ever go around there for dinner, she's just like, they're good cooks. Because her husband's a chef too, right? Epic. A former chef. Yeah.
And Kyle's got like a real fetish for all of the gadgets and perfecting things. So if he gets the big green egg, he will cook off that until he's got every single piece of meat perfect.
Down right.
But she was she wrote an article recently for a project we were involved in, and she was tasked with choosing her favourite cookbook. Anyway, what she said was Diana Henry is her favourite cookbook author of all time.
She is amazing.
I had never heard of her.
What?
Yeah.
I've heard of her, but I don't know.
She's got some amazing
nine books. Yeah. And Camille said she's cooked from them.
They're really approachable and easy cooking.
Yeah.
And her latest one is fantastic.
Oh, I should get
that's that. The tray bake one.
Yes.
It's all basically you throw everything in the oven. It's brilliant.
Yes. So that's what I was going to say is that I got that for Christmas. It's called From the Oven to the Table. Mm. And she's got a whole chapter on her favourite ingredient, which is chicken thighs. And I think I thought I was done with chicken thighs for life, but I am bringing them back. Yeah. Basically, she talks about the wonder of oven cooking and the basics of it being have a few trays, have a couple of different sizes, make sure that it's quite a crowded pan when you put things in the oven so that the juices, and she's tested all the recipes so that the juices evaporate to the right thickness, etc. But it's about 200 degrees, 45 minutes, do whatever you like, and the outcome's good. And so when we went to meet Simon's boys the other day, for example, I got a whole lot of chicken thighs, brushed them with harissa, sliced up some lemon, put two spoonfuls of onions and a packet of cherry tomatoes in.
Beautiful.
And put it in the oven, close the door, 45 minutes later, absolutely delicious. And you can serve it with a salad in summer or do mashed potato.
Yeah, in winter.
In winter or polenta or, So I think Diana Henry's From the Oven to the Table is an awesome book.
Does she do vegetarian tray bakes?
Yeah.
She does do some in that book. Yeah.
Is it, how new is it?
Came out just before Christmas.
All right.
Oh, well, in New Zealand at least. Yeah,
yeah right.
Which, is she English?
She is.
Yeah.
I think she might be Irish, actually.
Oh, yeah. Have you got her other books?
I've got quite a few.
Yeah.
Not all nine, but yeah, a lot.
Do you cook out of cookbooks on a daily basis?
No, not really.
Yeah, I see. I would always wing it.
The one thing I do use all the time is Eat My Books. Which is
Camille's got that.
Yeah, and it's so good if I've got an ingredient and I'm going, what am I going to do with this? I've got no inspiration.
Yeah.
You kind of just type it in maybe something else and all these things will come up.
I got given a subscription to that.
Oh, it's brilliant. It really is brilliant.
Okay, yeah. The subscription was a gift about 5 years ago, so it's probably expired. Yeah. But
no.
You just enter the books that you've got into it, don't
you? Yeah. So you have to index all your books. You have to index them. You have to, just say that they're on your bookshelf. And hopefully most of them have been. I mean, I've got a few books that haven't been indexed. You can offer to do that yourself. But
and doesn't it have food magazines as well? Like,
it does.
Yeah, like I think all the cuisines were on there.
They are.
Yeah.
The cuisines are there.
Oh, good. Yeah. That's
so
cool.
It's actually quite good. And you can put blogs on and, whatever. You know. So
I love the Bon Appetit team and what they do with food, and then there's that basically is their other sort of basic teaching people to cook Instagram, but it's so awesome.
I often just Google inspiration, which I'm sure a lot of people do, and then just click on recipes that I have heard of the author. But having all your books indexed, so you're like, I know this will be good.
Yeah,
because problem with Googling stuff is you'll get a recipe that's shit.
Totally. Yeah. And not knowing what the reputable links are, because it's all those massive food networks that produce such average recipes that come up the top of Google.
Yeah. I can't believe it took me so long, but I finally got a New York Times subscription.
Oh, awesome.
I've
actually become addicted to doing crosswords. But,
have you?
Yeah.
Cool.
Time wasting.
Everyone says that that's the best subscription to pay for.
Yeah. So really good food writers. That's great.
Yeah, and they do an email, I think, a weekly, but then it's very seasonal, so that's, I think...
Well, it's not our season.
Yeah, so it's the opposite way.
You've kind of got to think about it and think, I like that.
Yeah.
I'm feeling inspired to get out the,
what's it called? Eat my books.
Yeah, you should. Mm. Eat my book.
I'm going to do that. I'll do that with the other hand while I'm brexting.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's breastfeeding and texting.
Brext hard out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, another thing we were going to speak about today, which I am blown away by the selection, is RTDs. Alice, have you been looking into this?
Yeah, so I drink 99% of the time, I drink beer. I drink a lot of beer, which you may know about if you listened to us before.
Loves a beer.
I have noticed that other people have begun drinking these newfangled RTDs that appear to be, market themselves as like clean and natural.
I know, my gin says it's clean.
Are they all doing that, as opposed to dirty gin?
A lot of them are doing that.
I like a dirty
gin.
Some
of it doesn't seem to be.
Yeah.
Some of it doesn't seem to be based on much. But I think the idea is to get it away from the RTDs of yore, which, you know, is
what
sugar. Remember,
what is quite nice is that they're not so ridiculously sweet.
Yes.
Yeah,
nice.
I think we're all looking for drinks that are not full of sugar, that are not water, and I think that alcoholic, that applies to alcoholic and non-alcoholic drinks. That's why, like, people have been drinking vodka soda for 10 years as though that's the only thing you can drink that's low calorie but still gets you boozy.
Yeah.
And I can't stand it. It doesn't taste like anything at all whatsoever.
Yeah. No.
A lot of the, so we, I decided to get in a whole bunch for tasting, and I knew there was like Pals and Part-Time Rangers and a few others.
Which one should I try now?
Ended up getting 29 different RTDs to taste, which was quite overwhelming.
29?
Yeah, from like 10 different brands, all New Zealand brands.
Lots of them are vodka, lime and
yeah,
water.
A lot of them, as Alice, who is recording, the other Alice will attest, just tasted like nothing. Like, and I find it quite scary because they're quite boozy, yet they literally just taste like
but
sparkling
actually,
water on a slice
of vodka
lime.
Vodka ones are the nicest ones, I suspect.
Oh, yeah, that one tastes like soda with a twist.
Mm. Yeah, so.
But it's a hard one. It's
the
a hard
story,
shake.
The results of our tasting will come out, I think, late next week. So I won't reveal who did well.
I was quite surprised when we went to the cricket the other night.
Yeah.
How many people were sculling back.
Sculling back.
RTDs.
The RTDs
outside.
On the way to Eden Park.
Imagine if, well, I'm just thinking if they're big here, imagine Australia where everyone's just trying to maximise their muscles all the time. Yes. All the lads just sculling RTDs.
And it's so fucking hot.
Yeah, I remember in Dunedin there was one RTD, Smirnoff Black what all the rugby players drank because it was like 7 or 8%.
Yeah.
And had, you know, wasn't as calorific.
A few years ago, some new regulations came out where I think the ones that were like 8% are now, they can't be. There's some, I think 7% is the highest maybe. So
why can beer be 8 or 9?
Don't know, it just can.
Maybe because it's beer.
Because it's beer.
Yeah, right. But I mean,
well, I think because RTDs are slightly more.
RTDs, I suppose, are kind of targeted at
having multiple
Younger drinkers, whereas the 9% beers is for, you know, old craft beer nerds like me.
Yeah, I'm sure a few binge drinkers in Dunedin don't mind a
9%. Don't mind the odd hoppy
9%.
Yeah, totally. I guess they're also expensive. Like, RTDs can be quite cheap and get you fucked up for 9%, whereas who's going to spend like $20 on a 9%?
True.
So
that is a bougie session.
Yeah.
That is a big session.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was very eye-opening.
They tend to be heavier too, don't they?
Mm. Yeah. You can't sort of smash them back as easily.
Hey, one thing that I thought we could discuss that alluded to me the other day was, don't you think that good cooking is about, I mean, obviously it's about having nice ingredients to start with. That's always really helpful. The skill set of the person cooking, great, that's also helpful. But I think it's actually all about the sauces and the dressings.
Yeah.
If you think about the difference between what people cook at home and why they go to a restaurant, quite often it's the sauces.
It's the sauce, it's the salt, it's the fats.
Yeah.
Acid heat is one wise woman once said.
When I was thinking recently about what cooking classes we could run at Delicious Business this year, I was like, we should just do one on sauces.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Because I've been making zug, which is just
delicious.
Is it Iranian? It's
something like that.
Somewhere in the Middle East.
Yemeni?
It's Yemeni. God, it is. Yemeni. It's like a Yemeni salsa verde or chimichurri, right?
Yeah.
So you put curry, a whole bunch of coriander, some green chilies and some cumin in your mini whiz with olive oil.
Yeah.
And it is so delicious. And you can put it on fish, on meat, use it as a salad dressing, and it makes everything taste great. Yeah. And then the other day I made tartare at home. Like, just make, use your mayonnaise and then put some gherkins and capers. Some shallots.
Yeah.
Some, you know, and it just makes your fish and chips taste amazing.
Yeah.
It makes, I just sort of thought.
Yeah, do a sauce class. I'd go to that.
Yeah. What are your favourite sauces,
and like,
team?
A well-dressed salad is so important.
Yeah.
And some people just don't get it right.
This is true.
And, I, you know, it's easy to kind of over, you don't, you put too much on and then it's like, well, I've fucked it now.
Most sauces that are pre-made are disappointing.
Yeah, totally.
Very.
You just need to get the bougie vinegar, don't you?
But yeah, you do need that.
And then you need nothing else ever again in your life.
Yeah.
It just gives everything, you know, nothing, the acidity kind of is just edged off a little bit, which is lovely.
What's everyone's favourite sauce?
Summer
sauces, go.
Jenny, you go first, I'm thinking.
I am a huge fan of a salsa verde myself. Oh, yeah. Also, or a Selma Riglio. I've got loads of coriander in the garden. Not coriander, oregano at the moment.
Selma Riglio.
So, you know, it's where you pound up garlic and either oregano or marjoram. And best with a mortar and pestle, as most things are.
Yeah.
Weird, you know, because it smashes rather than cuts.
Yeah.
Kind of amalgamates it a bit better. Bit of lemon, bit of oil. Yum. It's just easy. Delicious.
I've never
fish.
Had it.
Really?
Never in my life. Oh, unless it's been called another name.
Might be called something else. Like a pounded oregano sauce.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I love that.
Yeah, that's
great
delicious.
With everything. I have a piece of feta over whatever.
Yeah.
Halloumi.
Salmorillo.
Salmorillo.
I also got given Anna Jones' new book for Christmas and made this really yummy.
I've got that, I think.
A whole cauliflower and you... In the mortar and pestle, I think just goes olives,
she's
herbs,
quite
garlic.
Good, I think.
Yeah,
because
I think
also
she's
she,
good.
I like the way that she kind of, which I think, you know, people like us who kind of cook quite a bit know instinctively, but lots of people are really scared to take a risk on something.
Yeah.
And she kind of spells it out, like, you know, put something, put your carb, and that could be a lentil or whatever, or your protein, or your kind of something crunchy.
Yeah.
Something a bit soft, something kind of spicy.
Yeah, you she know, does like, those matrix and it's like, put something, here's your base, choose something crunchy, choose something.
Which I think really good cooks just tend to do anyway without thinking about it too much.
Yeah.
But, yeah, for me, it's, I think she does a tray bake chapter actually. It's just like, choose something like this, something like this, something like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think acidity is... so important when you're making, particularly with like roasted vegetables and things like that, if you put something over them that's got a bit of acidity in it, like even if it's a creamy dressing, it just makes such a big difference. And, and you often find that when you're cooking for people, I think that those mini whizzes, you can actually get them from Kmart, where it's like a lawnmower, you pull the string.
Oh, those ones.
And so you can literally just throw a whole lot. One of my friends said to me at New Year, but all these sauces you're just whizzing up, like we don't cook like that, we don't think of it. And so I explained to her, literally it will emulsify, you just need to use some acid, some fat, and you know, you can use mustard or you
even
can
even your, you know, your Ninja Bullet.
Yeah, same thing.
I mean, you totally use that.
I have a mini whiz, the,
I had three Nutribullet sauces going in the fridge the other day.
It makes it easy because you don't have to get out, I think if, people are
it's
like
admin.
Don't want to get out their big food processor, which is fair enough. Mm. But when they're little one,
And whisking all day is
fuck that.
Painful. So I'm all in favour of the mini whiz and make yourself some delicious sauces.
Yes,
and maybe
doing,
we'll show you how.
Yeah, I've been doing quite a lot of tahini kind of sauces. Just
tahini is one of my favourite.
I just really like tahini and just chuck in some olive oil and some lemon juice and anything.
You have to thin it out with ice water, don't you?
I put a bit of water.
Any water.
In. Yeah.
Any water's fine.
And why do all the recipes say to use ice water?
I just put tap water.
I couldn't be bothered testing why in case it split and it was just a real faff. So I was like, fine, like using all this ice water. But can you just use normal water?
I just use normal water.
Yeah.
Oh my God. You don't even really need to add anything to that, do you?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, I'm tahini's delicious.
Yeah, tahini's great. I love the way it kind of, you know, chemistry on a plate, kind of, you know, you add lemon or something into it, or yogurt, and maybe just thickens and seizes up.
Yeah.
And then you loosen it down again. Yeah. Great.
Beautiful.
Yum.
Yum.
Well, let's get together and make a sauces cooking class, guys.
Sounds good. I'll come.
Cool. Well, unless anyone else has anything to offer. Odette's still asleep, which is going really well.
I forgot she was even here. She's an angel.
Thank you.
She is.
She also speaks French.
Does she?
Yeah.
She just doesn't show you yet.
Très intelligent.
With that name, how could she not?
Yeah. Exactly.
Have you taken her to Odette's and City Works Depot yet?
I haven't, but the lady, I took her to Christchurch with me on a little overnight work trip yesterday. Oh. And the air hostess was obviously a big ballet fan, and she went, oh, Odette, the White Swan. Oh. And that was actually just the name that we liked, and then I looked it up later and realised the ballet connection.
I don't know anything about the ballet connection.
Turns out I'm some sort of uber ballet
some
fan.
Sort of fancy lady.
Yeah.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thanks for coming in, Jenny.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Great having you.
Thanks.
We'd love to have you again.
And thanks to Alice for recording. Tina's away in Bali at the moment. Lucky Tina.
Thanks, Alice. And, just one more time, like, to give Simon Day some props for the absolute composure he demonstrated. Although he doesn't even think it's a big deal, so maybe we shouldn't mention it.
Yeah. No.
Cool. See
All
you
right.
in
See you next
February.
Month. Ka kite.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spin-Off. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spin-Off member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spin-Off Podcast Network.